I want to first thank our listeners for joining this podcast series on M&A Readiness. My name is Jeff Cox, and I'm joined today by three of my colleagues in Mercer's Global M&A Transaction Services business, Jennifer Jacobowski, Chuck Morritt, and Adam Rosenberg. Collectively, this group has worked on over 1,000 transactions representing both strategic and financial buyers and sellers. Chuck, why don't we get started with you? Our new research titled People, Risks, and M&A Transactions points to project management and communications is two of the most underinvested areas in transactions. Specific to project management, what are the key attributes of a successful project management office?
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate the question. I would cite three key criteria in an effective PMO or project management office. The first one is ensuring that the PMO has a strategic view. The second is ensuring that there is a very well-defined PMO organization model. And the third one, and likely the most important, is that there is a strong central leader of that PMO organization. From the strategic view perspective, you know, a PMO isn't just an organization that sets project plans and ensures that work is done, but it must be aligned to the strategic intent of the deal and take a very business-like perspective to the work that needs to be done. From the PMO organization point of view, successful PMOs are very well organized, have distinct roles and responsibilities across the organization, and have a very well-defined governance model because it's important to understand where and when decisions need to be taken. And that aligns to the third most critical point, is ensuring that there's a strong leader in place to drive the PMO. That leader should have the characteristics of being fairly senior in the organization, have a very broad business and operational view, and be able to direct individuals and take decisions on a day-to-day basis.
As a follow-up question, what are the strategic and operational differences between buyers and sellers PMO from your perspective?
Yes, well, the biggest difference is that when you're a buyer, you're looking to integrate a business and be able to ensure that you derive the value of that from a long-term view after making that acquisition. So it's, you know, it's a very long-term focus, whereas a seller has a much shorter-term focus, and their fundamental key value drivers are, one, ensuring that they disconnect the business from existing operations effectively and deliver that to the buyer, and the second one is to ensure an effective transition. And sometimes that requires setting up a transition services agreement and operating that for a short period of time to facilitate that transition.
Thanks, Chuck. Jen, let's move to you. As the research clearly points to communications as a critical area of investment to get a transaction right, in your experience, why is communication such a fundamental driver in deals?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. So transactions bring with them major change, and preparing employees for this change is crucial. You know, employees are in new roles, they have new bosses and new expectations, and dealing with things of these types can cause distraction and lost productivity. I think it's important for employees to know what is changing, what the business objectives of the new organization are on a go-forward basis, and what people are supposed to do so that they can be aligned with this new business strategy. Effective, frequent communications can pave the way to deal success and help to meet objectives quicker. I think it's also important to get the message out early and often so people understand the new organization and their role in the change. In the absence of facts, people will often tend to make assumptions, and those assumptions are likely inaccurate. A clear communication plan can engage employees in a timely way and can help avoid things such as unwanted turnover, reduced productivity, and low employee morale.
Jen, how about sharing your take on culture alignment, or frankly, misalignment? What are the primary derailers you see that can undermine a deal or drive success?
Yeah, well, I think it's well known that cultural misalignment has led to the failure of many transactions. One of the big reasons the AOL Time Warner merger failed was due to a clash of cultures from the get-go. So I think it's important to understand that culture is fundamental to who an organization is. It's who the employees are, what their values, beliefs, behaviors are, how the work gets done every day, and ultimately how a business achieves results. And if there are gaps in any of these areas when two organizations come together, it will be very difficult for them to work effectively together, make decisions, and achieve the desired business results. During the 78 interviews that we performed as part of the Mercer Risk Survey, there were several characteristics and behaviors that were used by those interviews to kind of define a winning culture. One, which I'll come back to what I just talked about, honest and frequent communications. You know, as I said earlier, this is super important in a time of transaction and oftentimes present in a winning culture, whether it's business as usual or, you know, during a time of change. Another important characteristic is leadership alignment and behavior definition and reinforcement. Changing behaviors is extremely difficult. To get people on board and to promote participation and cultural change, leaders must walk the talk by modeling the behaviors aligned with the new culture. This will then filter down to all levels of the organization. And it's not a silver bullet. Change takes a long time. It is important to have a consistent long-term approach to culture and change management.
Great. Adam, let's get your thoughts now on the best practices of retaining talent. What are the key or common issues you see in retaining talent and hedging flight risk pre and post-close?
Thanks, Jeff. Our research clearly showed that employee retention was the number one people issue that our clients and prospects face when working on transactions. Really important to make sure that you choose the right employees, and that's one of the biggest challenges that people face. If we look back, traditionally, the very top layer of executives were almost always targeted for some kind of retention plan. But what we've seen happen in the more recent past is that a wider group of people is being looked at, and actually in particular deals where a particular group of people are seen as being critical for the deal success, retention plans can be rolled out to that group as well. And this is partly about the financial side, but it's also about the wider employee value proposition. So people see things like, well, what's their future role within the organization and what are their opportunities for growth being as important as the financial side of retention. But moving on to the financial side, when it comes to any retention plan, we need to think about the timing of any payments. Should this be a single payment made in maybe 6 months' time or a staggered series of payments over 18 months or maybe even 24 months? And also, should the payments be made just for staying with the business or should there be performance indicators or measures that go along with those payments? We heard earlier on how communication was one of the most underinvested items when it comes to working on transactions, and we think that's important when it comes to retention as well. If people fundamentally understand the new business and their role within it, they're far more likely to stay than when they don't. And Jen talked about that earlier on. The research report also outlines 7 key value drivers on the buy side and 4 on the sell side that can help to drive success when it comes to transactions. And what I wanted to point out is on both the buy side and the sell side, retention of key talent is seen as one of those top value drivers. The final point I had was that later on this year, we'll be releasing the results of our global retention survey. And this will cover not only the prevalence of retention plans, but also amounts in particular deals. So one of the questions we're often asked when it comes to transactions is to how much to budget for a retention plan. And the results will be split down by region, by industry. It will show buyer and seller differences. So look out for the results of that later this year. Back to you, Jeff.
Adam, with that profound insight and the recognition that our listeners have day jobs, why don't I close this podcast out by thanking the panel and our listeners for joining Mercer's continuing series on M&A readiness. Have a great day. Thank you.